Let us stand for the gospel. This is the holy gospel according to Luke. Glory to you, O Lord. Now, when some were speaking about the temple, how it was adorned with beautiful stones and gifts dedicated to God, Jesus said, "As for these things that you see, the days will come when not one stone will be left upon another. All will be thrown down." They asked him, "Teacher, when will this be, and what will be the sign that this is about to take place?" And he said, "Beware that you are not led astray, for many will come in my name and say, 'I am he,' and the time is near. Do not go after them. When you hear of wars and insurrections, do not be terrified, for these things must take place first, but the end will not follow immediately." And he said to them, "Nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be great earthquakes, and in various places famines and plagues, and there will be dreadful portents and great signs from heaven. But before all this occurs, they will arrest you and persecute you. They will hand you over to the synagogues and prisons, and you will be brought before kings and governors because of my name. This will give you an opportunity to testify. So make up your minds not to prepare your defense in advance, for I will give you words and a wisdom that none of your opponents will be able to withstand or contradict. You will be betrayed even by parents and brothers, by relatives and friends, and they will put some of you to death. You will be hated by all because of my name, but not a hair of your head will perish. By your endurance, you will gain your souls." This is the gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. The words of Paul in the letter to the Thessalonians this morning speak to a particular circumstance that was happening in the church in Thessalonica. He speaks into a moment where people had lost hope, where people felt like what was to come, that promised future, the resurrection, the ushering in of the kingdom, had passed them by. We don't know all of what was going on in the church in Thessalonica, but we do know, as he writes in his letter about this, that this is one of the concerns of the people, that they have somehow now, as the generations have gone on, as they have been waiting and waiting for Christ to come again, that somehow Christ has come and they just missed it. And now they're wondering, why do we do what we do? There had been a tradition passed on to the church, a tradition inspired by the resurrection of Christ, a tradition in which wealth was redistributed, people were cared for so that no one had any need. We know this from the book of Acts. This is the ideal of the early church, a community that's caring for one another, that's supporting one another, that's gathering together for meals so that none go hungry, that's providing out of their abundance so that none may be impoverished, that none may be forgotten. And yet, now, that redistribution was getting challenged. There were people not really participating in the process anymore. And so Paul writes, we hear that some of you are living in idleness. That word idleness can also mean disorder. It just means like everything is getting shaken and mixed up. He says people were mere busybodies. They were not busy working. They were just existing. Maybe because they had lost their hope. They had lost their why. About why did they do all this faith stuff in the first place? What was the point of it all? The words of Paul are words that I've heard more recently especially in the mouths of some politicians. When we were in North Dakota, one of the debates was about access to food through government programs. It used to be called food stamps. Now it's a couple different programs. There's WIC and my mind's blanking, but the EBT process, stamp programs. Yeah, SNAP benefits. That's it. And they were debating putting new restrictions on these benefits, putting requirements on them. There have also been debates about whether or not to expand Medicaid and expand that social safety net of health care for the most poor and disenfranchised, as well as conversations about disability benefits and other things like this, these social safety net programs that we have in our society to make sure that nobody need perish or go hungry or go without care. And one of the verses that they would use to justify their position as if blessing it with Christ was this one: anyone unwilling to work should not eat. Paul's words are being used not to inspire people to care for one another, but to bless the freedom not to. One of the figures in the history of North Dakota that played a sort of a, holds a, an outsized role there in the national park there is named after him is President Theodore Roosevelt. And President Theodore Roosevelt was many things, and that included a hard worker. He was not just a politician, but also a rancher. And one of the things that he wrote in his little book on the key to success in life was this: far and away the best prize that life offers is the chance to work hard at work worth doing. Our country has a long history with a Protestant work ethic, this ideal of hard work, this ideal that hard work has its own rewards. And indeed, there is some truth to that. Being able to use the gifts that God has given us at something worth doing, to work hard at work worth doing, is indeed rewarding. But that hard work can only happen when we're taken care of and when we're taking care of one another. When my son was diagnosed with SMA, I was thrown into a community that I had very little engagement with before. That was the disabled community. People who are born or develop conditions of mind or body that restrict a lot of the normal ways of going about and living. And one of the things that I've learned with them through leaders and voices in that community, disabled people as they speak out, is that these benefits, these social safety net programs, they're not just nice things to have. But disability benefits, expanded access to health care, food on the plate, these gifts keep people alive. They are life and death. And they keep people alive not just to exist, because that's not what disabled folks want to do. They don't just want to just exist. A lot of times they feel invisible or forgotten, sort of cast aside, told that they are so brave and that they are such an inspiration. And yet, the only thing that they are being complimented for is the tenacity to just exist and keep living. They call it disability porn, when people lift up stories of disabled folk with this ideal that they are doing something that is impossible. And indeed, their lives are inspiring. Their words are inspiring. Their voices are important to listen to. But their voices are full of unique and special gifts that God has given them. And when you truly listen, you see that folks on programs like these, receiving benefits like these, they don't just want to just exist. They want to thrive and flourish and share their gifts with the world and be offered a chance to work hard at work worth doing. This year, there was a unique effort by a recording artist together with some directors and writers and a number of folks in the disabled community to create a video to demonstrate the gifts that they have. And we're gonna turn to this video, I hope. We're gonna try technology this morning and share a little bit. And in it, you will see the lives of folks that are on programs, the social safety net programs, but folks that are sharing their gifts for music and art, but also gifts for love, compassion, as their parents, husbands, wives, children, mothers and fathers, people that are doing a lot more than just existing. Let's share this mic works. James Ian speaks about making this video that is the first project of its kind where individuals with SMA were involved at every level of the process. The actors, the stories told, the music being written, the direction of the video, the art created for it. They share their gifts. They can put their gifts to work because some of those basic needs were provided for, that kept them alive to offer their gifts to the world. In the ancient Near East, the economy was based on manual labor, agriculture, hard work. Today's economy has a lot more automation. It opens up a lot more gifts to be shared with the world, a lot more variety. There's even more places, more unique spots for gifts to work. And yet, our wealth continues to get consolidated, and the richest few, and so many struggle just to exist, just to live. When Jesus ushers in the resurrection, ushers in a new vision of how we are economically together. But it's also a vision that is not just new, but old as well, going all the way back to the beginning of the covenant when Moses brought down the tablets from the mountain and spoke to the people of Jubilee. Resurrection and caring for one another is tied together. When we care for one another's basic needs, God's gifts can flourish. And when we come together as a church, what we do absolutely matters. What we do, the care that we inspire as church for the sake of the world, matters. So as church, let us share together. Let us provide together. Let's no one sit on the sidelines or just talk about it, but do the work that Christ calls us to and live into this promise so that we may all flourish as one. Amen.
Look into my God's right hand, when the